Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Vavakama Daf Chof Vav. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Please note that today's shiur begins 4 lines from the bottom of Daf Chof Hey Omid Beis. I repeat, 4 lines from the bottom of Daf Chof Hey Omid Beis. Marking-wise, the Gemara opens with a diamond. You will notice on the side of the Gemara, under our Nosei/Mivneh heading, the Nosei being the topic heading, Mivneh structural note, a diamond represents a series of Hatsa'os. Hatsa'os are proposals or suggestions. Shehein Shelokadin. In fact, we're going to have suggestions that are not true on a legal level, but there we'll say suggestions she'efsher lahagia alehem derech kalvachomer, that by employing kalvachomer logic, the following conclusions will be reached. In reality, the conclusions are not true, or they're not accepted on a halachic level, on a legal level. The question is, if a kal vachomer leads me to such a conclusion, then on what basis are we not going to be accepting it? The answer to that is, we continue in our note, b'chol echod mehen, within each one of these suggestions that's introduced with the diamond, al ha-gemora lidchoyis ha-kal vachomer, the Gemara's role is going to be to reject the kal vachomer. The rejection of the kal vachomer conclusion will be through citing a verse, which you'll see is marked with a dashed underline, Omar Kro, where the pasuk says otherwise. In other words, the kal vachomer conclusion will be one thing, and the verse will indicate to the contrary. Let us now turn to the Gemara, to the first diamond, Utehei. Shein v'regel chayav b'rushus harabim mikal v'chomer. Let it be that the damage of shein and regel be guilty, meaning compensation will have to be made for damage that the animal does through the shein or regel damage in a public thoroughfare. And let us say thusly, as a result of kal v'chomer logic. Now, as we said in our introduction, Shane and Regel are in fact not guilty in a public domain. But that, we'll have to see why. Because by kal vachomer logic, we should hold the owner of the animal who does damage through Shane or Regel as being guilty in a public domain. What's the kal vachomer? It's as follows. Uma keren shebirshus hanizik eino mishalim ela chatzi nezik. Birshus harabim chayeves, the Karen form of damage, when done in a private domain, it pays merely half damages. And yet the Karen form of damage in a public thoroughfare is guilty. Shein v'regel shir birshus hanizik mishalim nezek sholem. Shein and regel are more severe as evidenced by the fact that in a private domain, they pay full damages. Eino din shibushus rabim chayevan. All the more so, shein and regel in a public domain should be guilty. And as we said before, but we know that's not so. That if an animal does damage in a public thoroughfare through the shein or regel method, the owner is exempt from compensating. Why is that? Omar Kro, the Pasuk, says, Ubir b'stei achir. That Pasuk is in the context of the damage of Shein v'Regel. So, from this pasuk, it says that it wreaks its destruction b'stei acher, means in someone's private domain, the lo birshus harabim, and not in the public thoroughfare. So as a result, the feeling is that Shein and Regel will, as a result of this pasuk, Shein and Regel are not guilty in a public domain. The Gemara asks, Midi kule koamrinon, palga koamrinon. When we suggested that Shein and Regel should be held guilty in a Rishus HaRabim, we're not suggesting that it should pay full damage in Rishus HaRabim. Our suggestion is it should pay half damage in Rishus HaRabim, as it's derived from Karen, which pays half damage. The pasuk of Ubir b'stei acher, that is a pasuk that holds guilty Shein and Regel in a private domain, that tells me that Shein and Regel in a private domain pay full damage. As far as Shein and Regel in a public domain, so all the pasuk would tell us is that it doesn't pay full damage in a public domain. Nevertheless, when we suggested Shein and Regel being guilty in a public domain through the Kal Vachomer, let it pay half damage in a public domain, as is the case with Karen, which is the source of the Kal Vachomer. And yet we know that Shein and Regel are totally exempt in a public domain. As far as the Kal Vachomer is concerned, we're now just going to repeat ourselves. As far as the Kal Vachomer is concerned, Shein and Regel should be chayev in a public domain half payment, half damages. As far as the pasuk that was cited, that does not interfere, that doesn't contradict our suggestion. All the pasuk Ubir b'stei acher tells us is that in a public domain, Shein and Regel would not pay full damages. Let it pay half damages. And yet we know, as far as legal practice is concerned, Shein and Regel pay nothing in the public domain. So why is that? The Gemara answers, Omar Kro, v'chotsu es kaspo. That posuk means that you will pay half. Chotsu is to divide something in half. You will pay half of its payment. And there you have a limitation in the verse. Kaspo shel zeh, that means half payment is made for the keren form of damage. Velo kaspo shel achir, there's no half payment for any other form of damage. So with this pasuk, we reject the suggestion that let Shein and Regel be chayev half damage in a public domain. As you can see, not so. The concept or the ruling of half damage payment is something unique to Karen. A new suggestion. V'lo tehe Shein v'Regel chayeves b'shus hanizik elo chatzi nezik. Let it be that Shein and Regel, when it does damage in a private domain, pay no more than half damages. Now, that is not true on a legal basis. On a final ruling level, there is full damage that Shein and Regel pays in a private domain. The suggestion is, let Shein and Regel pay only half damage in a private domain. Mi Kal Vachomer mi Karen. And you see again the use of the double underline to highlight the Kal Vachomer. Let us conclude thusly as a result of a Kal Vachomer from Karen, as follows. Uma Karen shebirshus harabim chayeves. Birshus hanizik eino mishalemes elo chatzi nezek. Mind you, Karen, which is a very severe form of damage insofar as that it pays for damages done in a public thoroughfare. And yet in a private domain, it pays only half damage. Shein v'regel shebirshus harabim ptura. Shein and Regel are even, say, they're a lighter form of offense in the sense that in a public domain, they're exempt. Ein odin shebishus hanizik mishalim chatzi nezik. So then, all the more so, Shein and Regel in a private domain should pay no more than half damages. And yet, we know that in a private domain, Shein and Regel pay full damages. Well, why is that? Omar Kro, the Pasuk says, Yishalem. Tashlumin Ma'alyo. Yishalem indicates a complete, a full form of compensation. So the Pasuk overrules the Pasuk by Shein and Regel, Yishalem, full damage, overrules the conclusion that I would have reached through the Kal V'chomer. Now another suggestion. Velo tehe keren b'shus harabim chayav. Let it be that keren in a public thoroughfare should not be guilty. And why such a suggestion? Mi Kal V'chomer. Through Kal V'chomer logic, as follows. Uma shein v'regel shebrishus hanizik, nezik sholem. Brishus harabim ptura, mind you, shein and regel in a private domain pays full damage, and yet in a public domain, it's exempt. Keren shebrishus hanizik, which is even more lenient, chatzi nezik, it pays only half damage. Eino din shebrishus rabim p'tura, then all the more so, in a public domain, it should be exempt. And yet, we know that Karen in rishus rabim pays. It pays half damage, but it does pay, contrary to this Kal V'chomer. So why is that? Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Omar Kro, yechtsun. The pasuk by Karen says, yechtsun. Ein chatzi nezek choluk, lo birshus harabim, v'lo birshus hayochid. No distinction is made when paying the half nezek, half damage payment. No distinction is made between different domains. Not only in a private domain will it pay half damage, but in a public domain as well, it will pay half damage, contrary to what the Kal V'chomer would have led me to believe. A new suggestion. V'hei Adam Chayov B'kofer Mikal V'chomer. Adam is a reference to a man who does damage. In this case, you see the word kofer. Kofer is a reference to payment made upon the killing of a person as a victim of some act. So in the case of a shor hamuad, and a damaging ox, an ox that's prone to damage, if such an ox, a shor hamuad, kills a person, there is a payment called kofer, that the owner of the ox pays the value of the person that was killed by his animal. Here we're suggesting that if a person kills another person, let the offender be obligated to pay kofer. Just to repeat ourselves, kofer is a payment for the death of a person at the hands of an animal. What about the death of a person at the hands of another man? So here our suggestion is let a person be chayav kofer, which of course you know from the scheme of this Gemara that when a person kills, no money payment is made. But here we're suggesting otherwise. Let a person be obligated to pay kofer mi Kal V'chomer, from Kal V'chomer logic. Uma shor she'eino chayev bar b'dvorim chayev b'kofer. When an animal damages a person, it pays only one form of payment, the payment we call nezek. Nezek is basically the damage value. The animal who commits an injury to a person pays only that. It does not pay there are other payments that would have to be made if a person committed damage to a fellow man. An animal does not make those additional payments. Those additional payments include Ripui, Sheves, Tsar, and Boshes. Those are categories of payment, medical expenses, pain, embarrassment, unemployment. Those four forms of payment are not paid when an animal injures a person. So our Kal Vachomer starts off by saying, look at Shor. Shor, relatively speaking, is a more lenient area insofar as Shor does not pay those four additional types of payment that we mentioned, and yet Chayav B'Kofer, an animal which kills a person, so the owner has to pay Kofer. Adam Shechayav B'Arba Dvorim, a man who imposes injury on fellow man pays those additional four forms of payment that we listed. Eino din shiye chayev b'kofer. All the more so, if a man kills another man, he should have to pay the kofer payment. Why not then? Omar Kro, the Pasuk says, kechil asher yushas olov. And in this Pasuk, we have a limitation expression, the word olov, on him. And this Pasuk is in the context of an animal that killed a person. So it says that as whatever is placed upon him has to be paid, meaning on the owner of the animal, olov ilo al odom, on the animal that killed a person and not on a man that killed a person. Viehe shor chayav barba dvorim mikal vachomer. And again, a new suggestion. Let an animal be chayav to pay those four additional forms of payment through kal vachomer logic. As we mentioned earlier, an animal that imposes injury on a man pays only the nezek form of payment, not the additional four forms of payment, nezek, tsar, shev, tsar, sheves, ripui, and boshes. However, through kal vachomer, we should conclude that the shor, in addition to the nezek, damage, form of payment, he should have to compensate for medical bills, unemployment, pain, and embarrassment. Through kal vachomer, mi kal vachomer, uma odom, sheino chayav b'kofer chayav arba dvorim, a person who we know is exempt from the kofer payment, yet is obligated to make these four additional forms of payment in the event that he causes damage to a fellow man. Shor shechayav b'kofer, an animal which kills has to pay kofer. Eino din shiye chayav barbo dvorim, certainly should be obligated in the case of imposing injury to man, pay the additional four payments. So why not? Omar Kro, ish. The pasuk goes on. Here it's quoted in an abbreviated fashion, but it talks about ish ki temum ba miso, a man when he imposes a blemish on a fellow man, and that's the pasuk. In that context, we learn about all the different forms of payment. But there's a limitation expression here, and that's ba miso, man in fellow man, and hence we say velo shor ba miso. When it's a man and fellow man, then the four additional payments are made, not when an animal imposes damage in amiso in another man. Before we continue in the Gemara, we glance at the side. We have a nosei, a topic heading. Tashlum koifer avur regel b'shus hanizik. The Gemara is going to investigate the need to pay kofer for damage done by an animal trampling and killing in this case a baby in a private domain. Is kofer paid? Hagemora tochiach, the Gemara will prove shekayim kofer beregel mishitas Rabbi Tarfon. The Gemara will prove that there exists such a payment called kofer for the killing of a person through the regel form of damage. Regel is an animal that damages in its normal course of walking. And it will prove thusly, Mishitas Rabbi Tarfon, based on Rabbi Tarfon's opinion, Shekeren Tam Birshus Hanizik Mishalim Koifer Sholem. Rabbi Tarfon holds that an animal that's Tam, that is not prone to damaging, and yet if it does damage through the Karen method in a private domain, full payment is made. Mishalim Koifer Sholem means that if a short Tam kills someone through goring in a private domain, full damage is paid. Full kofar is paid. And we're not talking about damage, of course, we're talking about payment for the death of the individual. Rabbi Tarfon also kal v'chomer, Rabbi Tarfon in reaching his point that there is, that Karen Tam pays full kofar, is a kal v'chomer that he made mikofar beregel, kedei lumoid es dino. In order to come to reach his conclusion, namely that a short tam that gores and kills someone in a private domain pays full kofar, in order to come to that conclusion, we will see in our Gemara that Rabbi Tarfon had to base himself on a kofar payment that's made by regel. So in turning to our Gemara, we're asking this question: if an animal kills through its normal behavior, not goring, but through, I should say that the kofar payment made by an animal is associated with an animal goring a person to death. Or shor hamuad, an animal that's been proven to be a damaging animal, gores someone to death, then kofar is paid. In our Gemara, we're investigating, does the kofar payment go beyond the case of a shor hamuad that gores a person to death? When we speak about regel, we're talking about an animal doing its damage, or in this case, its killing, through normal walking. Karen, as we've spoken about so many times till now, represents an unusual form of animal behavior. Of course, when it repeats itself three times, beyond that, that which was unusual becomes usual for that particular animal. Regel, in contrast, is normal behavior for all animals. So now we turn to the Gemara. Ibaya laho. Regel shedorsa gabi tinog bechotzer anizik, mahu shetishalem koifer. An animal that tramples and kills a child. I assume that a child is the example because the normal walking pattern of an animal would be that if it encounters something large, it wouldn't walk on it. An adult human being would be a large individual. A tinok, a child, an infant, is rather small, and an animal doesn't necessarily pay that close attention to what it's walking on. It will easily trample upon an infant, killing it. And our question is a kofar payment to be made? This, of course, takes place in a chotzer anizik, in a private domain. Does the owner of the animal pay kofar, the value of the victim? We're noting, as we've done before, that kofar itself is written in the Torah in the context of a shor hamuad, where it does damage through keren that became a muad. Now we continue. Mi amrinon, mi dida have a keren. You'll notice that this question is presented in the Aleph O Dilma Bays fashion, where O Dilma is squiggle underline a few lines from here. We give you two possibilities, two sides of the question. So we continue. Mi amrinon midi dahave akeren. Do we say that the regel halocha is similar to keren? Keren kevan diova tre tlosu zimne orchehu mishalim kofer. Karen, once it repeats itself, once the animal does its Karen damage several times, It becomes urche. It's that particular animal's normal way. Umeshalem kofer. The Karen of a Shor Hamuad pays kofer, as we indicated before. The Torah expects the owner to pay the kofer payment. Hochinami lo shna. Here too, with regard to regel, which is a normal behavior pattern for an animal, no difference. It too will pay kofer. Oh, Dilma. Karen kavonosu lahazik. Karen, which is, we'll say, the scriptural location or source for kofer, Karen is characterized by the animal's intent to damage. Hi, the regel, the walking, the normal walking pattern, ain't kavonosu lahazik. There the animal does not have destructive intent, making regel different than Karen. So that according to this side of the question, this possibility, then Karen, the kofer payment would be limited to Karen, and we wouldn't be able to impose Karen payment on an animal that kills through regel. Toshma. Notice we have a long marking here. The Gemara attempts to answer the question. We have a Tanaic source that reads as follows: Hichnis shoro lechotzer baal habayis shelo birshus. An animal owner brings its animal into the yard, the courtyard of a homeowner, without permission. V'nochay lebaal habayis emes, and it gores the homeowner, and he dies. Hashor beskila balov, the shor is beskila. That means the animal is to be stoned. Ubalov, the owner of this murderous animal, bein tam, bein muad, mishalim, kofer sholem, divrei Rabbi Tarfon. Regardless of the animal's being prone to damage or not, whether it's tam, not prone, muad, proven to be a damaging animal, the owner will pay kofer sholem, full damages. And we want to emphasize, and we've done so with our dashed underlining, full payment is going to be made, even in the case where the animal is tam. Divrei Rabbi Tarfon. That's Rabbi Tarfon's ruling. Kofer sholem betam l'Rabbi Tarfon mino lei. This idea of paying full kofer. Kofer is, once again, the payment for the killing of a person when done by an animal. This idea of kofer sholem, even though the animal is a tam is that kind of animal, if it would render damage, it pays only half. Nevertheless, Rabbi Tarfon tells us that an animal that's, even though it's tam, it's a docile animal, it will pay kofer sholem if it killed someone through goring them. Where does Rabbi Tarfon get that idea from? Lav mishum de sover le Rabbi Yossi Aglili, the Omar, is it not because he, Rabbi Tarfon, holds, like Rabbi Yossi Aglili, that rules tam mishalem chatzi kofir b'rishus harabim? That a docile animal that, let us say, killed someone by goring in a public domain would pay half damage in a killing through Karen in a public domain. And Rabbi Tarfon, using this Rabbi Yossi Aglili approach, gets to kofer sholem in the Rishus HaNizik. And how? Umaisi lo mikavachomer miregel. And he comes to that conclusion by using kavachomer from regel. Now, of course, you're wondering, well, what does that mean? The Gemara does not spell things out. So we look at Rashi, who in fact does. So we're looking together at Rashi, a little less than halfway down in the Rashi commentary, starting with the Dibur Maskil, Umaisi Law, Rabbi Tarfon, the Rishus HaNizik Kofer Sholem. Rabbi Tarfon extends the Kofer payment when done in a private domain. The animal owner will pay full kofer, mikal v'chomer, miregel. Ki hechi de gomar lekeren tam leinyan nezikin b'masnisin. Just like he concludes that Karen Tam will pay full damage. Nezikin is a reference to damage as opposed to kofar, which is the payment for death. Just like Karen Tam pays Nezikin in the Mishnah. Namely, what did Rabbi Tarfon say? Rabbi Tarfon said that in a private domain, the Karen Tam will pay full damage. The Hochi Gomar law, and this is how he derives it. This is now the Kal V'chomer that we made a reference to. And in the course of this Kal V'chomer, what we need to emphasize is the approach taken to Regel and Kofar. The Kal V'chomer is Ma Shein V'Regel Shepturim B'Shus HaRabim L'Gamri. Mind you, Shein and Regel, which are totally exempt in a public domain, Birshus Hanizik Kofer Shalem, in a private domain, the Regel will pay full Kofer. And you can see we've dashed underlined these key words. Karen Shebirshus HaRabim Chatzi Kofer Kereb Yotzi Haglili. Karen, in a public domain, in contrast with Shein V'Regel, Karen does pay in a public domain Chatzi Kofer. If it kills in a public domain, if it's a short tam that kills in a public domain, it will pay half Kofer, Kereb Yotzi Haglili. So we see that the attitude toward Karen in a public domain is more severe than the attitude toward Regel in a public domain. Therefore, Eino Din Shebrishus Hanizik Kofer Shalem. If there's a Karen damage done in a private domain, then all the more so there's reason for imposing Kofer Shalem. And this is all being said with regard to Karen Tam. Just to repeat, Karen in Rishus HaRabim, which pays half Kofer according to Rabbi Yossi Haglili, then in a private domain, all the more so, we should conclude that it pays Kofer Shalem. Like we saw, where? By the case of Regel, paying Kofer Shalem in the Rishus HaNizik. Midagoma Rabbi Tarfon Hochi, from the fact that Rabbi Tarfon comes to his conclusion concerning Kofer Shalem in the Rishus HaNizik by a short tam, Almo Iko Kofer Beregel. It must be that there exists Kofer Beregel. Dilav Hochi b'may Maisilof. Not for that, how could Rabbi Tarfon have reached his conclusion that there should be Kofer Shalem by short tam in Rishus HaNizik? So now we go back to the Gemara, and we see a bow tie marking, and we see Almo Iko Kofer Beregel. By having employed the Kal V'chomer logic that we saw in Rashi, we saw that there must exist Kofer Beregel. Before we go further, some structural notes. There is a bow tie that we saw on the side of the Gemara under our Mivneh, under structural note. The bow tie highlights the word Alma. Hadgoshas Hamaskona. This is a highlighting of the final conclusion. Deiko Kofer Beregel. In other words, we're concluding at this point. It's true that the Gemara follows with an attempt to dispel this conclusion, but at this point, this represents a conclusion, and in fact, it will continue till the very end of the sugya. So we're highlighting each time the Gemara makes reference to this conclusion, the word Alma with a bow tie. Alma basically means, therefore, you see, etc. You see that there is Kofer Beregel. As we continue in the Gemara itself, you'll notice that in the Gemara text itself, you'll notice that there's a bracketed section, and if you skip the bracketed section just for a moment, you'll notice afterwards that the Gemara concludes that it's mistaber, it's most likely that there is kofar beregel. And in fact, a final bow tie appears right before the Mishnah. But till we get to that point, there's a section that, as we mentioned, appears in brackets, where triangles begin to appear in alternating directions. And on under our note on the side, we've written makav. Makav means an attempt to keep track of a give-and-take style Gemara. The triangle pointing upwards, Nisoyon Lidchoy Samaskona, an attempt to dismiss the conclusion that we reached, the Loimar, and to say the Rabbi Tarfon Lomad is Dino Mikavachomer Minizikin de Regel. The Rabbi Tarfon came to this conclusion concerning Karen Tam Vishus Hanizik paying Kofar Sholem from the din regarding Nizikin of Regel, damages caused by Regel as opposed to killing of a person through Regel. If you look just by way of markings in our Gemara text, the final triangle that you will see is an inverted triangle, which is a dechia. In other words, we end up rejecting whatever attempt we're making here to dismiss the conclusion. So if we're going to reject, it sounds maybe a little convoluted, but we're going to be rejecting the attempt to dismiss the conclusion. So if we're going to be rejecting that attempt, we're going to end up with the conclusion of Iko Kofar Beregel. So now let's turn back to the Gemara. Once we've laid out the structure. Omar Rav Simi Minahardo. Rav Simi attempts to question our conclusion by saying, Tano, the Tano above where we saw the Tam paying Kofar Sholem, according to Rabbi Tarfon, Minazikin de Regel Maisi Law. He reaches this conclusion through making a Kavachomer by Nizikin, starting as your starting off point, Nizikin of Regel. That through the Kavachomer made by citing Nizikin, the Nizikin payment made by Regel, I will conclude that there is Kofar Sholem by a case of Karen Tam in the Rishus Hanizik. Now, I'm sure that sounds just a bit abstract. So in order to get grounded, we look at Rashi. What do you mean by a kavachomer made through Nizikin of Regel? Fortunately, Rashi spells it out. And let's learn the Rashi together. The Rashi you see is basically where we left off in our previous Rashi reading. Minazikin de regel maisi law. Ulaolam leko kofar beregel. I will tell you at this point that there is no such thing as kofar beregel. Kofar is a payment when an animal gores someone to death, not an animal that simply tramples on someone through its normal walking. Well, if that be the case, how does Rabbi Tarfon come to his conclusion regarding kofar sholem by tam in a Rishus Anizik? V'hochi gomar Rabbi Tarfon. The logic is as follows. Ma regel b'she b'rishus harabim poter minezikin. B'rishus anizik nezik sholem. Regel damage in a public domain does not pay. No compensation is made for damage done by regel in a public thoroughfare. And yet, in a private domain, full damages are paid. Karen, Shebershus Rabim Chatzi Kofer Rabbi Yosef Aglili. Karen, a goring death of person in a public domain, pays half the victim's value as in accordance with Rabbi Yosef Aglili. Eino din Shebershus Hanizik Kofer Sholem. All the more so when an animal gores someone to death in a private domain, full kofar shall be paid. So here we go. We have reached a conclusion. In other words, Reitarfen's din that kofar sholem is paid in a private domain without making any reference to kofar beregel. What was the starting point of the Kal Vachomer? The way we look at regel, that renders damage. Nezikin. Nezikin is not to be confused with kofar, which is for the killing of a person. As far as the killing of a person through regel, no payment would be made. Let's turn back to the Gemara. The Gemara at this point challenges what Rav Simi just said. Rav Simi just suggested that we should be able to make a Kal Vachomer from Nezikin of Regel to the din of a goring death in a private domain. Ah, but how can you make a Kal Vachomer? The Lifroch, can you not challenge that Kal Vachomer as follows? Ma le Nezikin de Regel, we were thinking that Nezikin of Regel is a more lenient area of law, and hence you can use that as a Kal Vachomer when to the din of Karen. But that suggestion of Nezikin of, the realm of Nezikin as being viewed as a, we'll say, a lenient area of law is not necessarily true. And it's as follows. V'lifroch ma l'nezikin deregel, shekein yeshnon be'esh. Nezikin payments are made for damage done by fire. Fire that does damage pays Nezikin, pays the damage we call Nezek. As opposed to a kofar payment, which you do not find by Aish. So the thinking that Nezikin, the realm of Nezikin payments, is a more lenient area of obligation. That's not so, because it's more lenient than the area of kofar payments. That's not so, because you see that Nezikin payments are made by regel, and Nezikin payments are made by Aish. But Aish is fire. Fire that kills someone, the owner of that fire does not pay kofar. So the Gemara responds, you know what? Make your Kal Vachomer mi tomun. Tomun, literally, is something that's hidden, enclosed within. Fire, damage is a payment made for that which was damaged was exposed. However, damage by fire of something that is buried within, hidden within. For example, an item of value that's buried in a pile of hay. And I light the pile of hay, setting it up on fire, and then fire consumes that which was tomun, that which hidden within the pile of hay. There's a scriptural exemption for damage done to Tomun. So now, the suggestion that the Gemara just made to make a Kal Vachomer from Tomun is seen in the Rashi. We turn to the Rashi. Let's read the Rashi together. Mi Tomun shepoter be'esh the chayav beregel, that which is hidden and is damaged through fire, there is exemption. That which is trampled upon, that happened to be hidden, there is obligation. Tomun is a unique exemption in the case of fire damage, not trampling, not regel damage. Umaisi lohochi, and here Rashi is kind enough to spell out the kal vachomer. And once again, our goal within the bracket discussion here is to reach a kal vachomer, the conclusion of Rabbi Tarfon that there's kofer shalem in the Rishus HaNizik for a short time without making reference to kofer beregel. So how would Rabbi Tarfon reach his conclusion? So we continue in the Rashi. Ma regel shebrishus harabim ptura miklum. Regel damage in a public thoroughfare is totally exempt. Chayeves brishus hanizik afilu al hatomun nezek shalem. Regel that does damage even on something that's covered, that's hidden, pays full damage in a private domain. Karen, shebishus harabim chayav kofer, chatzi kofer. Karen, which is more severe than regel, in that in a public thoroughfare, half kofer payment is made, as per Rabbi Yossi Aglili's opinion. So when it comes to Karen in a private domain, which we already saw as a more severe area of law, certainly it will pay full kofer. So now we have reached the conclusion of Rabbi Tarfon that there's kofer sholem for a killing done in a private domain without citing kofer beregel, but rather focusing on the realm of, or using ours, or starting point for the kal vachomer, the realm of nezikin, damage payments. The Gemara, though, undoes, challenges this particular kal vachomer as follows. Ma letomun sheken yeshno bebor. Sure, you thought a moment ago that tomun was a source of leniency. Nevertheless, what do we mean by a source of leniency? We said that the tomun damage, something hidden that's trampled upon in a public thoroughfare, results in no payment. So tomun was viewed as a source of, we'll say, leniency. And hence, we were able to make the kal vachomer regarding Karen and kofer in a private domain. However, you can't say that. You can't say that tomun represents a realm of leniency. Ma letomun sheken yeshno bebor. Tomun damage is something that is obligated to be compensated for if it fell into a pit. Rashi cites an example. If an animal was enclosed in a sack or in some type of casing, and it fell into a pit and the animal died, so the owner of the pit has to pay, even though the damaged item was tomun. Kofer, on the other hand, is something that is not paid when a person falls into a pit. So that the realm of tomun is more severe than the realm of kofer. Hence, you cannot make the kal vachomer we just suggested from tomun. The Gemara suggests, well, I have a new suggestion. Mikalim. Let us make a kal vachomer from kalim of regel. Now, this is a very, very terse, very highly abbreviated Gemara. Basically, of one word, and you have to construct a whole thought pattern, a whole kal vachomer with this one word. Well, Rashi gives us a little bit more information than one word, and we will try to construct the kal vachomer, nevertheless, from the case of kalim. Kalim are vessels. A moment ago, a reference was made to Bor, to the pit. And with regard to the pit, we said that Tomun is something that is compensated for when an item was enclosed, an animal was enclosed within a sack, and it fell into a pit and died, so the owner of the pit has to pay. And we said, for that, the owner of the pit has to pay, but kofar payment, if a person falls and is killed in a pit, the owner does not make a kofar payment. So you can't make the Kal Vachomer from the case of Tomun. Why? Just to repeat ourselves. Because Tomun is something that needs to be compensated for in a pit. However, there is another area, another type of damage that a pit is actually exempt for. And that is a case if vessels fall into a pit and are damaged in falling into a pit, or destroyed in falling into a pit, based on a scriptural reference. And you can see in Rashi, Mikalim, he says, Potar buhu esabor, u'mikalim deregel maisi la uchadeprishis. So that all we would have to do is go back to the case of regel damaging vessels in a public domain. And we know that there's total exemption. And in a private domain, full payment is made. Karen, which in a public domain pays chatzi kofar, certainly in a private domain will pay kofar sholem. That's exactly Rabbi Tarfon's conclusion. And he can reach that conclusion by making a kal vachomer using as his starting point kalim, vessels damaged through regel. The Gemara says, nope, you can't make a kal vachomer like that because of the following pircha. You notice the inverted triangle. Ma lekalim sheyeshnon be'esh. Kalim damage done by fire that damages vessels, so the owner of the fire has to pay for the damage his fire did to the vessels. Fire that kills someone, so there is no kofar payment that's made. So that if you were thinking of a moment before and making your kal vachomer, use as your starting point damage to kalim being something that we view as more lenient than kofar, not so when it comes to kalim damaged, for example, by fire, where there you see damage to vessels is paid for, whereas kofar is not paid for. So that Rabbi Tarfon could not have reached his idea of kofar sholem from the case of damage to kalim. Well, the Gemara says, I'll tell you how, a new suggestion, how Rabbi Tarfon could have made his kal vachomer. Mikalim tumunim, hidden vessels. Ah, fire is not obligated to compensate for damage done to hidden vessels. However, kalim tumunim that are damaged by regel, compensation needs to be made. So how would the kal vachomer work? As follows. Mind you, an animal that tramples kalim tumunim, tramples, let's say, vessels that are in a sack in a public domain, would be exempt. In a private domain, full damage is paid for. Karen, in a public domain, if it kills, pays half kofar. So all the more so, in a private domain, full damage will be paid for. Now, since the kalim are tumunim, in light of the the immediately preceding rejection, it would have no power anymore, because when it comes to Aish, in fact, would be exempt for damage it does for Kalim Tamunim. So we can refer to Kalim Tamunim as an area of leniency. Whether you're dealing with fire, there will be exemption. Whether you're dealing with regel of Kalim Tamunim in a public domain, there will also be exemption. And yet, in a private domain, Kalim Tamunim that are damaged, full compensation needs to be made. So when you speak about Karen killing someone in a public domain as being obligated to pay half damage, in a private domain, all the more so, full compensation would have to be made. And that's what Rabbi Tarfon had said. Notice, once again, no reference to a kofar payment made by regel. However, we undo that kavachomer as well. Ma lekelim tamunim sheyeshnon ba'odam. You cannot suggest, as we did, that kelim tamunim is a more lenient area of law, because kelim tamunim, when damaged by a person, if a person takes a baseball bat and whacks a sack full of vessels and smashes them, that person has to pay. What happens if a person kills another person? No kofar is paid. So to make a kal vachomer from kalim tamunim, thinking that kalim tamunim is more lenient area of halacha, more lenient than kofar, that's not so. As you can see, with regard to a person that does damage to kalim tamunim, a person that does damage to kalim tamunim, just to repeat ourselves, has to pay for their destruction. But a person does not pay kofar. So how in the world did Rabbi Tarfon reach his conclusion that Karen pays kofar shalem in a Rishus HaNizik? El olav shma minomi kofar deregel maisi lo. It must be that he did so because there exists something called kofar by regel. And as we saw in our original kal vachomer, if an animal, let us say, had trampled and killed someone in a public domain, it would be exempt. But in a private domain, if an animal trampled, he would pay kofar shalem. Karen, in a public domain that kills someone, pays half kofar. In a private domain, certainly would pay kofar shalem. Alma, so we see from here, ika kofar beregel, shma mina. This would be conclusive, then, that would be our Rabbi Tarfon's only option for concluding his din of Karen Tam Kofar Shalem in Rishus HaNizik. His only way to reach that conclusion would have been to recognize that there is Kofar by Regel. Omar Le Ravacha Midifti Le Ravina Hochi Nami Mistabro Diika Kofar Beregel. It's also quite logical that there is Kofar Beregel. Tei salka daitoch leko kofar beregel v'tono minazikin deregel maisi lo. For if you were to think that there's no such thing as kofar by regel, and Rabbi Tarfon had reached his conclusion from the case of regel that does nezek, and through Nezikin of Regel, Rabbi Tarfon would have made his kal vachomer to conclude that there's kofar shalem by Karen Tam Bereshus HaNizik. Lifroch, you could have undone such a kal vachomer. Ma l'nezikin de Regel, shekein yeshnon beregel. How can you suggest that Nezikin of Regel is a more lenient realm than the realm of kofar, when you find If it were so, again, I repeat, this is a Havamina. If it were so that there was no Kofer Beregel, you would be able to challenge the Kal Vachomer from Nezikin of Regel by simply saying that Nezikin, that Regel pays for Nezikin and does not pay for Kofer. So you cannot, you wouldn't have been able to conclude that there would be Kofer Shalem by Karen and a Rishus HaYochid and a Rishus HaNizik. In other words, there would have been a built-in pircha to have tried, have one having tried to make a Kal Vachomer from the case of Nezikin of Regel. Because, in fact, Regel pays for Nezikin and doesn't pay for Kofer. El Olav Shma Mino Mikofer de Regel Maisi Lo. In order for Rabbi Tarfon to have reached his conclusion that there shall be a Kofer Sholem payment by Karen in a Rishus HaNizik, he must have used as his starting off point the realm of Kofer de Regel. And just to repeat, that killing of a person through Regel in a Rishus HaRabim is exempt. Killing a person in a private domain pays Kofer Sholem. Karen, which pays Chatzi Kofer in a Rishus HaRabim, certainly would pay Kofer Sholem in a Rishus HaNizik. That's Rabbi Tarfon's law. Alma, what do you see from this? Iko Kofer Beregel, Shma Mino. That there is Kofer Beregel. And this is a final conclusion. And now, the Mishnah. Adam Muad Li'olam. Here we speak about a person called Odom HaMazik. And hence, this is our topic heading on the side of the Gemara. A man. Up till now, we've spoken extensively about animals that wreak damage. Now we talk about a person. And an Odom Muad Li'olam, a person is considered Muad, which in practical terms means he'll pay full damages. Bein shogeg, bein mezid, bein air, bein yoshein. Whether it's unintentional or with intent, whether he is awake or he is asleep, and causes damage, he pays full damages. Simo es ein chavero, if he blinds a fellow man, even b'shogeg, b'shogeg means even unintentionally, v'shiber es hakelim, or breaks vessels, mishalem nezek shalem. He shall pay full damages. The Mishnah made reference to blinding of a person and the breaking of vessels. Katani simo es ein chavero, tumyo de shiber es hakelim. The Mishnah seemed to teach together or almost compare the damage of blinding someone and the breaking of vessels. What legal outcome is there from such a comparison? Well, ma hosom nezek in arba dvarim lo, just like over there with regard to shiber sakelim, there's only one form of payment, namely damage payment. Obviously, when vessels are broken, there's no medical cost, there's no embarrassment cost, there are no additional costs. So just like over there, by shiber sakelim, there's only nezek payment. Arba dvarim lo, those additional four payments are not made. Af simos ein chavero, so too with regard to the blinding of a person's eye, and we emphasize when done unintentionally, nezek in arba dvarim lo. The payment for damage, that's made, but the additional four payments are not made. Rashi, four lines from the bottom, nezek in arba dvarim lo, the lo mechayv arba dvarim, the Torah requirement for those additional four forms of payment that we've referred to already several times today, sheves, tsar, ripui, and boshes, unemployment, pain, embarrassment, and medical costs, those four payments are made ela omezid o korov lemezid. Only when damage is done to a fellow man with intent or through recklessness, something close to intent. Dumya dechir yirivu nanoshim dasam ksiv ribui v'sheves. Similar to the case featured in the Torah, which in which context you find medical damage, medical payments and unemployment payments referred to. And in that portion of the Torah, the damage that's imposed on the victim is a damage done with intent. So, intentional damage, or something close to it, that results in the payment of the additional four payments, but not damage done without intent. We continue on the to the Gemara on the top of Amud Beis, Mino Hani Mili. From where do we know that Nezek is payment made even b'shogeg? Nezek being the payment for damage. We'll say the depreciation caused through damage that needs to be paid even when the damage was done b'shogeg without intent. From where do we know this? Omar Chizkia, the Chengtona de Bei Chizkia. The following Tanaic source is taught in the Yeshiva of Chizkia. Omar Kro. The Pasuk says, Petza tachas petza. And from that phrase, we learn, L'chaivoi ala shege kemezid v'aloinis kerotzo. It should be pointed out that this Pasuk of Petza tachas petza is what's viewed as a Kro Yesera. Rashi explains a little bit more, but it is, if you translate that expression, it's an extra phrase in the Torah, and hence it's available to teach us this point, that the Nezek payment is made under all circumstances, even when done b'shogeg, even when done unintentionally. And this, of course, is in contrast to the other four payments that would not be made under these circumstances, under shogeg circumstances. The Gemara asks, though, "Hi, mi boyale, this posuk of petzatachas petz I need for something else. Litain tsar b'mokom nezek," which means that when one damages another individual, a person, he pays nezek, and in addition to nezek, he pays tsar, the pain payment. One should not think that nezek includes tsar. There's one form of payment called damage, and then there's an additional payment called tsar. So that point, that nezek is not all-inclusive, is learned from this pasuk. How then can it be used to teach me that payment for nezek is made even under shogeg circumstances? The Gemara answers, Im kein, lichtav kro petza bepetza. If the role of the posuk was to teach me only one point, then it would have been able to say petza bepetza, my tachas petza. What do I see from the Torah choice to teach this thusly, tachas petza, petza, tachas petza, shma mino tarti. I am able to learn both points from this posuk. Before we continue, we have a new marking scheme. Diamonds will appear. We have a series of diamonds, and you'll notice how they continue onto Daf Chof Zayin Amud Aleph, and we'll be numbering. At this point, you'll see it appears as seven diamonds. On the side of the Gemara, our Mivneh structural note, we've indicated these are Memros Shel Rabo B'Inyan Nezikin, and these are comments or teachings of Rabo regarding Nezikin, regarding damages. We've chosen a rather broad phrasing to enable us to include all of these different teachings. The double underlining will be highlighting different cases. Mikrim, shonim, different cases. A squiggle underline will be used quite plentifully. You'll see on the side, we've indicated highlighting the word le'inyan, etc. Nafkamina la'alocha will be highlighting the different legal ramifications. Number one, Nezikin, regarding damage payment. Number two, Dalid Dvorim, the additional four payments. Number three, ramifications regarding laws of Shabbos. Number four, ramifications regarding Golus, the exile into an Ir Miklat, into a city of refuge, in the event that death takes place unintentionally. And five, Eved, damage done to a slave. Shein V'ayin are references to an owner of a slave knocking out his slave's tooth or eye, or in fact other limbs, that the Torah teaches if an owner does knock out one of those limbs of his heathen slave, the slave goes free. So we have a number of different areas of halacha that will be analyzed under several of these circumstances. So as you look ahead in the Gemara, you can see under the first diamond a number of incidents, different incidents, and those are highlighted by the double underline. And within each section introduced by the double underline, these different areas of halacha will be explored. Now the Gemara. Omar Rabba. Hoysa even munachas loy b'cheikoi, v'lo hikir ba v'omad v'nofla. A man was seated, and there happened to be a stone on his lap. He was not aware of it, stood up, the stone rolled off his lap and did damage, v'nofla, and fell. L'inyan nezikin chayav. If it rendered damage, it hurt another person, or did other forms of damage, that damage payment must be made. We indicated before that the payment called nezek is paid under all circumstances, even without intention, even under extenuating circumstances, even under ones circumstances. Le'inyan arba dvarim poter. If, as this man stood up, a person was injured, the additional four payments would not be made. As we indicated before, that the four additional payments, Tsar, Sheves, Ripui, and Boshes, those payments are made only when damage was done with intent or near intent. Le'inyan Shabbos, as far as a Shabbos violation that may have resulted from this stone falling off his lap, there would be no Shabbos violation, because Meleches Machsheves Osur Torah, when the Torah speaks of Shabbos violations, it has to be something that's called Meleches Machsheves. You might explain that as a planned, intended activity, whereas the stone falling from this man's lap was without intention. So it would not constitute grounds for a Shabbos violation. Rashi expands this issue by, and let us look at Rashi together in the upper part of the narrow lines. Meleches Machsheves Osur Torah. The Torah prohibits with regard to Shabbos violation those activities that are done Shniskave Lasos Melacha. The person intended to do some form of constructive activity, whether it be a person intended to write letters, a person intended to sew a garment, a person intended to, let us say, to break something with constructive intention. So, if a person was miskaving to do a malacha, elo kasavur shayoyim chayil, however, he thought that today is a weekday. Wasn't aware that today was Shabbos. Oh, sovur shemalacha zumuteres, or he thought the constructive activity that he was doing was something that was not forbidden. Then you would have a Shabbos violation. Namely, as we just saw, intentional planned activity. His mistake might have been that it's today was not a, it wasn't Shabbos, or the action that he did was something allowed. V'chol hani damrinan hocha lo niskavnu lasos hamalacha hilkuch poter. All of the examples that we'll see here, and we'll see in each time the Gemara is saying l'inyan Shabbos meleches machsheves, because the activities described here were lacking intent. We continue in the Gemara. Le'inyan galus potter. If, let us say, as he stood up, the rock fell out and killed someone, he would be exempt from galus. Now, that needs more explanation. So we look at Rashi, potter, degabi galus, ksiv makin nefesh bishgogo. The Torah, in describing the type of person that has to go to the city of refuge, is someone that's makin nefesh bishgogo, v'lo mikri bishgogo lehechad avile yediyah meikara. The idea of the Torah is killing someone without intent. But I think you lose something in the translation. The word shgoga, Rashi tells us, is something, is a state of mind where there had been awareness earlier, Elohe chodavi le'yidia meikara, and then later forgot, became unaware. But the term shgog implies some form of initial awareness. In this case, the person with the stone that had been on his lap, there had been no awareness at the outset whatsoever of even the stone's presence. So that here you're lacking the minimum requirement to obligate someone to go to a city of refuge in the event of an unintentional murder. So, the inyan golus, as the Gemara says, potter, this person would be exempt if the rock that fell off his lap would have killed someone. The inyan eved, let us say we're, the fellow who stood up owned a slave, and as far as the stone falling off his lap resulted in the blinding of a slave or the knocking out of his tooth, would the slave go free? So, plukta der Rishum Amliel v'Rabbanan. This depends on a Tanaic controversy. Disanya, and the rabbis disagreeing are Rabbi Rishum Amliel on the one hand versus the Rabbanan. Disanya, hare shehoya rabbi roifei. Imagine the slave owner is a person who's a rofei. Rofei often is translated as a doctor. A doctor, a dentist, the Omar lo, and the slave said, "Kachol eini." Apply kachol. Kachol is some type of ointment, medication. Sometimes it's viewed as a cosmetic, but in this context, we would say it's a type of therapy treatment, and it involves applying the substance called kachol. And the slave requested that. And what happened? Vesim'od resulted in that slave becoming blind. Or the slave said, Chator li shini, drill my tooth, which is a dental practice. And the master did it, vihipila, and ended up in the treatment ended up in knocking out the slave's tooth. Sichek ba'odon v'yetz l'cherus. This slave can, as they say, laugh all the way to the bank. He laughs at his owner and goes free. That's a literal translation, but the point is that the first opinion, the Tanakama, holds that the though there was no intent in the tooth or eye being put out of service, he nevertheless goes free. Rav Shmuel Omer v'shichasa. The pasuk describes v'shichasa, meaning a destructive act. Achiskavin l'shachasa. A slave will not go free under those circumstances unless there was destructive intent in the blinding or the knocking out of the tooth. Not so in the case of the master who was a rofe offering treatment and the unintentional negative result transpired. So, as far as a slave going free under those circumstances of a man standing up and the rock falling off his lap and killing and knocking out the tooth or blinding his slave, as you can see, that the freedom of the slave would be dependent on this Tanaic disagreement. Now, new circumstances. Hikir ba v'shachacha v'yamad v'nafla. A man was seated, aware that there was a stone on his lap. He then forgot about the stone. And then stood up, stone fell. We review these same cases. Le'inyan Nezikin, Chayev. L'inyan arba dvarim poter. There was, at the time of the damage, there was no intent, so the four payments are not made. L'inyan golus chayev. Regarding golus, in this case, since there was initial awareness of the stone being there, he later forgot, we have enough reason for obligating the offender to go to the city of refuge, as is the rule concerning people who kill others unintentionally. Diomakro bishgoga. The posuk uses the term bishgoga, and that word implies michlal dehavi le yediyah, implying that there was initial awareness. Vehavya le yediyah. In this case, he had awareness, as we saw in the double underline, just four lines up. Hikirbo. He had been aware, but just forgot. The Inyan Shabbos Potter, the Inyan Eved Plukta, Rav Shlom Liel, Verabonan. Niskavein Lizrok Shtayim Vezorak Arba. A person took a stone, had intent to throw it two amos. It ended up going four amos, and damage resulted. The Inyan Nezikin Chayev. The Inyan Arba Dvarim Potter. He intended for the rock to go only two amos. It went four amos, so at that point he had no intent for it to reach that distance. If someone was injured, so only the Nezikin payment is made, but not the additional four, because of the lack of intention. L'inyan Shabbos Mleches Machsheves Bo'inon. As far as Shabbos violation is concerned, the distance of throwing something to Amos, which was his intent, that distance would not be culpable vis-a-vis Shabbos. Throwing something with an intent of it going four Amos, and in fact it goes four Amos, that would be a totally different story, because as far as the laws of Shabbos are concerned, the movement of an item in a public domain for amos, that would be a Shabbos violation. In this particular case, his intent was not for four amos. His intent was for merely two amos. That it went for was something without his planning for that. Therefore, L'inyan Shabbos, regarding Shabbos, Meleches Machsheves Bo'inan, you need a planned Shabbos, we'll say, level violation, and that was lacking here. L'inyan Golus, Asher Lot Soda Marachmona, the Pasuk speaks of Asher Lot Soda, a prat, this comes to exclude L'niskavin Lizrok Shtayim V'zorak Arba. Rashi has two polar explanations to the Gemara we just read regarding Golus. So we look at Rashi together across from here, L'inyan Golus. Approach one says Chayav. Dichtiv, the Pasuk says Chayav means he's obligated to go into exile. The Pasuk says Vashir lo tzoda v'samti loch mokom. Pasuk describes someone killing someone else without the intent of literally trapping him or killing him. And I placed for you cities of refuge. Prat lemiskavin lizrok shtayim v'zorak arba she'eno b'toiras v'chiyozidish. Someone who threw something two and it went four and four amos and it killed someone at that four ama mark, that is not an example of intentional murder. That's what this means. She'eino b'toros v'chiyozidish, ela b'toros v'samti loch mokom. Rather, it falls in the category of those that are deserving of a city of refuge for their protection, for their welfare. So, if a death happened as a result of his throwing something and going further than he intended it to go, so he has to go to an ir miklat for his protection. Lishnachrina, another version, Vashir Lot Salda Pratlim Miskave Vichulei, the Potter Migolus, he is totally exempt from going into Golus. The Hochi Mashma Shalot Soda, Shalon Iskavain, Litsade, Vizlizroik Etzlo, Yonus, Pratlizez Shetzida. The Posuk speaks about a Shalot Soda, where you had, killed someone through a projectile, which went in a direction that you had no intention for it to go. To the exclusion of this case, where the projectile went in the direction that he intended it to go, it just happened to go further than he intended, so that's not included in those that have to go, that are obligated to go to the Ir Miklat. Let us continue in the Gemara. Le'inyan Eved, regarding damage done to the slave, the eye, the tooth, examples that we saw before, Plukta, Dibshkumalil, Varabonan. This too would be determined by that Tanaic controversy. Niskavein, a new case, Niskavein Lizrok Arba Vizorak Shmoina. The person threw the stone with the intent for it to go a distance of 4 amos, and in reality it traveled further, went 8 amos. Le'inyan Ezekin Chayav, Le'inyan Daledvorim Potter, Le'inyan Shabbos, regarding Shabbos, which requires a planned activity, take note, however, that the initial intent already had within it the distance that is a Shabbos violation. Throwing a projectile in a public domain for amos is a distance that is forbidden for one to throw on a Torah level on Shabbos. So he intended for something that was, we'll say, already a Shabbos problem. However, in reality, the projectile went further than he intended. So on the one hand, you have an initial plan of something that would qualify as a Shabbos violation. As far as where it landed in reality, it wasn't where he intended. Would he be considered in violation of Shabbos in this case? So the Gemara adds, Ba'omer kol mokoim shetirtze tonuach. In. If he announced, if he intended, let us say, for this projectile to land, or let's say he expressed his satisfaction regarding the landing of this projectile at any point, whether it be his four amma intention or any more than that. If that be the case, so wherever it lands would be retroactively what he intended. So then in, that would be a Shabbos violation. So that even though he intended it for it to go to 4, it went 8, but it's going 8 was part of his original mindset, namely, wherever it lands, I am happy. So then that would be a Shabbos violation. Elo, if that was not the case, but rather he wanted it to go 4 and not 8, then it would not be a Shabbos violation. Le'inyan Golos, Asher Lo Tzada, Prat Le'niskavin Lizrok Arba V'Zorak Shmoina. Once again, the explanation of this would be dependent on the two Lashonis that we saw before in Rashi that we read together. Le'inyan Eved, Plukter Shum Leil V'Rabonan. Now we have a new diamond, a new Memra of Rabbah. Of Yoma Rabo Zorak Kli Meroy Shagag. The owner of a vessel threw a vessel off a rooftop. Uvo Acher Vishibroi Bemakel. Someone else came along before the item landed on the ground. Someone else came and smashed it with a stick. Potter, the stick wielder, is exempt. Maitaima. Why is he said to be exempt? Because what he broke was going to break anyway. Mona tevira tovar. Literally, a mona is a vessel. A broken vessel is that which he broke. Not that it was literally broken at the time that he broke it, but it was broken in the sense that it was inevitable that it would break. So his wielding of the stick didn't make matters any worse than it would have been with his absence. Therefore, he's exempt. V'omar Rabba Zora Kli Meroish Hagag. Mazik, a person who is not the owner of the vessel, someone who wants to destroy someone else's vessel. We'll call him the Mazik. He throws a vessel that's not his off a rooftop. Vayutachtav Koramuksosis. And on the floor, in other words, where this vessel would have landed, at the time the vessel was thrown off the roof, there were pillows or mattresses, something that would have protected the vessel from breaking. Uvo acher v'silkan. Then someone came and removed the protection elements before the vessel landed. So the vessel will now smash on the ground. O shekina v'silkan. Or the one who actually threw the vessel initially through some method, he himself removed the pillows before the item landed, the very item that he threw off initially. I could imagine without dealing with exceeding the speed of light or anything of that nature, I could just imagine that there was a long rope attached to the mattress on the ground. That rope was so long that it reached the rooftop from off which he threw the vessel. So initially he threw the vessel off the rooftop. At the time that he threw the vessel, the mattress was still in place. He then yanked on the rope, removing the mattress from its protective location, and then the vessel broke. In either of these examples, the guy that threw the vessel off the rooftop, Potter, he is exempt. Why is that? My time, why? Be'idna deshadye, at the time that he threw it off the rooftop, namely, at that time, that action of throwing it off the rooftop is the point at which we judge his guilt or innocence. Well, at that point, Pesuke Mifsuki Gire. Now here, literally, it means his arrows would have been blocked. But that means for our purposes, his damaging intention could not have been achieved. His intention could not have been achieved at the point that he threw it off because the protective element was in place. Rashi, let's look at Rashi together. Four lines from the end. Potter Sharei Mizrikosai, from his throwing, Ein Sofo Lishover, its end, its destiny would not be one of breaking. Achi Notlu Hakorim, until the mattresses are removed. Either someone else came and removed the pillows, or the thrower himself removed them. Potter, he is the thrower of the vessel, is exempt. The grama benazik and haved, because at very worst he was only a causative force in the breaking of the vessel, but it wasn't his throwing of the vessel that directly resulted in its breaking. He threw the vessel, and it's only because of the removal of the mattresses that the item broke. And even if the one who threw the vessel initially off the roof was the one who removed the pillows, the removal of the pillows is that which really caused the damage of the vessel. But in doing so, in removing the pillows, the offender wasn't exerting any force whatsoever on the vessel itself. And in that spirit, we say he's a groma benezik, and he's only a causative factor and not a direct cause of the breaking. The Gemara continues, Vi Omar Rabba, Zorak Tinok Mirosh Hagag, someone threw a baby off a rooftop. Rather gruesome scene here, but that's what he did. Uvo Acher V'Kiblo B'Sayef, and if throwing a baby off a roof is not bad enough, someone else came before the baby landed, and in a bayonet fashion or a spear fashion, he caught the baby on his sayef, on his sword. So the baby's actual death was a result of being pierced by the sword that this fellow walking by happened to have wielded. What about the guy who threw the baby off the rooftop? Pluto de Rebuta ben Becerra v'Rabbanon. So we have to introduce a Tanaic controversy between Rebuta ben Becerra and the Rabbanon. And after learning this Tanaic controversy, we'll see if the fellow who caught the baby on his sword, with intention, is he considered guilty for having been the one to have actually been responsible for the child's death? Desanya, Hiku Asor Bnei Adam Basora Maklus. 10 people beat on some poor victim with 10 sticks. Bain Bavasachas, these 10 people hit him either simultaneously, Bain Bozeh Acharzeh, or be it one after the other. Kulon, we continue at the top of Daf Chof Zayim Turin. The Tanakhama says they are all exempt. As far as the Tanakhama is concerned, his understanding of the verse is a death penalty for murder is only when you kill an entire, you're responsible fully for the killing of the individual. With regard to each one of these offenders, they cannot be described as the one responsible for the killing of the individual. At worst, he is partially responsible. That's not enough, as far as the Tanakhama is concerned, to hold him accountable and penalize him with a death penalty. Rebuta ben Becerra Omer Bozeh Acharzeh, if the hitting was one after the other, in other words, not simultaneous, but in a staggered fashion, Ho'achron Chayav, the last one is guilty. Because he hastened the victim's death. So in using this analysis, hastening one's death, according to Rebuta ben Becerra, is considered a capital offense. So as far as the baby thrown off the roof and the sword holder, according to Rebuta ben Becerra, the fellow catching the baby on his sword is guilty because he caused the baby to die seconds earlier than had he not raised his sword, rather the baby landing on the ground. But that extra fraction of time is enough to hold the fellow who hastened the baby's death responsible. That is, of course, only according to Rebuta ben Becerra. The Tanakhama, you can see, does not hold accountable that last person. Bo Shor V'Kiblo B'Karnov. You notice little bays here in the diamond. There was a little aleph at the bottom of Chof Vav Amid Bays. four lines from the bottom, you might have noticed it, where it said, Bo Achiv Kiblo Basayef. A second party caught the baby on his sword. Here, Bo Shor V'Kiblo B'Karnav. Here, the baby thrown off the roof was caught on the horns of a damaging ox, a Shor Hamuad. And naturally, the baby was impaled upon its horns and died. The baby died. Pluto Rabbi Shmuel Benoishir Rabbi Yochanan Brokev Rabbanan. How do we rule in such a case? This is dependent on this Tanaic controversy between Rabbi Shmuel and the Rabbanan that argue regarding the matter of the kofar payment. Desanyo v'nosan pidyoy nafshoy demei nizik. When the Torah demands kofar to be paid, so according to the first opinion, the Rabbanan, the payment is made in terms of the value of the victim. Rabbi Shmuel ben Oishir Rabbi Yochanan ben Brokev Eimer Demei Mazik. He says it's the value that's paid is in accordance with the value of the man responsible for the damage, the owner of the ox. So how do we apply that over here to the baby caught on the horns of the animal? So we look at the Rashi Plukted Rabbi Shmuel v'Rabbanan, four lines from the top. Leinyan kofar, they argue regarding the kofar payment. The Rabbi Shmuel domar kofar b'mazik shaminon mishalim kofar. According to Rabbi Shmuel, that says the kofar payment is a payment made in terms of the value of the offender. The offender in this case is a reference to the owner of the ox. He's an adult that has market value. Aval rabbonon. The Shaimina Benizik Hailo Havile Domim. But according to the Rabbanan, that the evaluation for establishing the kofar payment is made in terms of the victim, here you were dealing with an infant. The infant doesn't have a market value, and therefore there would be no payment. And Upotter. The Omar Rabbah, Nofal Meroy Shagag, Veniska Beisha. A man fell off a rooftop and ended up upon a woman. And in this case, when we speak about upon a woman, we mean in an intimate fashion, in a fashion of, we'll say, of an act of intimacy. It might sound like a bit contrived, but as far as Gemara analysis is concerned, it's necessary to analyze even cases that sound far-fetched. The ramifications of such cases can be far-reaching and applied in under other, we'll say, more common circumstances. Be that as it may, this is what happened. Man fell off a rooftop and ended up, attached to a woman in an intimate fashion. Chayev bedalid dvarim. He is obligated to compensate the additional four payments. Now you might ask, but we said earlier that the additional four payments in addition to Nezek are paid only when there is intent or close to intent as opposed to something unintended. So why here is he Chayav Badalit Dvorim? So Rashi answers the question. Rashi tells us that this man fell off a rooftop while standing at the edge of the roof. Beruach mitzuya, in a situation where a normal wind, a normal velocity wind, was enough to blow him off the rooftop. A person putting himself in a position like that is highly irresponsible, and therefore it's termed as korov lemezid. It's close to being an act of intention. It's a highly reckless form of behavior, and therefore he is held responsible for the additional four payments. Ubiyavimtai loy kona. And as far as Yavoma is concerned, Yavoma is a situation where a woman's husband died, leaving no children, but a surviving brother. So does the intimacy between the man who fell off the roof, which is her brother-in-law, the man who is the Yavam, result in an acquisition, a yibum marriage, a yibum acquisition. So the Gemara says, no, you bought your vivinto lo kona. Now this is an interesting point, in so far as, generally speaking, yibum is kaina. A yibum marriage is achieved even if he does so, whether it's with intent, obviously, that's he intends to acquire her as a wife in a yibum marriage, but even if it's b'shogeg, a person acquires her. Why then, in this case, where there was no intent, does he not acquire her? So Rashi answers, when we speak about a yibum marriage as being consummated, even b'shogeg, that would be if a man, let us say, had intention to conduct intimacy with some woman, with another woman, and it turned out that it was his sister-in-law. His sister-in-law, who had been a widow of his brother, leaving no children. So the man in that case had intention for an act of intimacy, just not with the Yavama. However, in our case, where he fell off a roof, he had no intimate intentions to begin with. A man lacking all intention of intimacy, though he ends up in a position, in a physical position of intimacy with the woman, with the Yavama, he does not thereby acquire her as a yibum marriage. Let's continue in the Gemara. The Gemara reviews the points concerning the additional payments beyond Nezek. We said, Chaya B'dalet Dvorim, what are the four Dvorim? What are the four payments in this case? So here, we're going to present the matter slightly differently than the previous cases. The four payments in this case are going to be inclusive of the Nezek payment. Up till now, when we've spoken about the four payments, we've spoken about the four payments that exist besides the Nezek payment. Here, we're going to speak about four payments which include the Nezek payment. If that be the case, so which is not included? Which form of payment is not included that we had mentioned before? So let's see. Chayov benezek, the person falling off the roof and causing damage to the woman, so he has to pay damages. Betzar, pain payment. Beripoy, medical expenses. Besheves, sheves is a payment made for unemployment. If she previously had been employed and now she's going to be unemployed, so there's a certain rate that we calculate for her unemployment compensation. The details of that are discussed later in the Masechta. Avol boishes loy, but payment for boishes, for embarrassment, that is the, we'll call the fifth payment that's not made over here. So you have four payments, but in this case, the four payments, besides Tsar, Ripui, and Shevis, happen to include Nezek. The payment that is not made in this case is Boshes, the embarrassment payment. Disnan. We're taught, Eino Chayev al HaBoshes at Shei Miskaven. Payment for embarrassment is not made until there is intent. In this case, he simply fell off the roof. He had no intent to cause any embarrassment. Fiyoma Rabo, Nofal Merosh Hagag. A man fell off a rooftop. Beruach She'eno Mitsuya, in an unusually high velocity wind. Vehizik Ubiyesh. And in falling off the roof, he damaged someone and caused the victim embarrassment. Chayav al hanezek, for nezek, a person has to pay. Upoter bedalet varam, but the additional four payments are not made. Beruach mitsuya vehizikub yesh. He fell off the roof as a result of a wind blowing at normal velocity. In falling off, he caused damage and embarrassment. Chayev bedalet varam upoter ala boishes. He is chayev for making four payments. And note the contrast between this and the case of Ruach She'eino Mitsuya. There, his falling off the roof was totally beyond his control. A high velocity wind, something high, unexpected and unusually, an unusual wind. So the result of that was payment only for Nezek. The additional four payments would not be made. In this case, not just Nezek is paid, but an additional three payments, a total of four payments are made. Upoter ala boishes. However, for the embarrassment form of payment, that there is no need to compensate. Why? Because there was no intent to cause embarrassment. Ve'im nishapech, if however before landing on the victim he twisted around, he flipped himself around, and then fell on the person, chayav af al aboishes. In that case, he's chayav even for the embarrassment payment. Now, what do we mean, or what's the reason for the chiyuv of boishes in this case? So Rashi says, ve'im nishapech, li'achr shishu limpo, if after he started falling he flipped around, his flipping around was to position himself in order to fall on this particular victim. Oh, you had intent to fall on him, so you have to pay for boshes. And here the chiddush is, say, contrary to the way we've been explaining till now, we've been giving a superficial explanation along now, namely intent to cause embarrassment will result in a boshes payment. Here we see an additional chiddush, that intent, not only to cause embarrassment, but any presence of intent, even though he didn't have intention for embarrassment, but he did have intention for landing on the individual in this particular case, where we said him nishapech, he has to pay for boishes. He has to pay for the resultant embarrassment. Desanya, as is taught in the following source. The pasuk just mentioned describes a case where two men are in physical altercation with one another. The wife of one of the men comes along in attempt to protect her husband from the, we'll say, from the other party with whom her husband is fighting. So she extends her arm and grabs the private parts of the other man. The pasuk describes that as saying v'shilcha yada v'yichzika b'mevushav. So we see in this Tanaic source the following. From the fact that the Torah says v'shilcha yada, that she extended forth her arm. Eini yodea shechzika, would I not be able to figure out from that that she took hold of the other fellow's private parts? Ma tamid lomar v'yechzika. So why does the Torah spell that out? Why does the Torah spell out information that I would have been able to figure on my own? Lomar loch. It comes to tell me. Kevon shniskavein lahazik. The extra expression comes to tell me that as long as there is intent for damaging, even if there is no intent for actual embarrassment, that is sufficient for imposing the boishes payment made for causing embarrassment. So, unlike that which we've been saying till now, I mentioned before that we were given up till now a fairly superficial explanation, intent to cause embarrassment, even without intent to cause embarrassment, but some level of intent, that is enough to to obligate a person to compensate for embarrassment. In a number of the cases we saw earlier, there wasn't any intent to even cause damage. So in those cases, we saw consistently an exemption for boshes. Here we have another statement of Rabbo, Vyoma Rabbo, Hiniach lo gacheles. A person takes a hot coal and places it, aleph, al libo, umes, poter, on a person's chest, on his heart, and the fellow dies. So the offender here is exempt. Why? Because that victim should have pushed off the coal. He had enough mind about him to remove the coal, and, well, he didn't do so, leaving himself to die. The offender, the one who placed the coal, is not held responsible. Al bigdo v'nisraf chayav. If the person took the coal and placed it on someone's garment and the garment burnt, so the person placing the coal is obligated to compensate. The Rashi says chayav. The hodelo silka, as far as the victim not removing the coal, so far he figured the victim figured at beine le bedina v'yifali. I'll have a chance to receive compensation in a court of law. So there wasn't sufficient motivation for him to cast off the coal. Therefore, the one who placed the coal is held responsible. Omar Rava. Rava said that both of these, Travayu Panini, both of these cases that Rabba taught are found in Tanaic sources, in Mishnayos. You might want to note that this section of Gemara is accompanied by a long point. Rava is making the point that what Rava taught us is found in Tanaic sources. So there were two points that Rava made that we noted with an aleph and a beis. The first was al libo. So Rava says al libo, the case that Rava taught that placing a coal on someone's chest and then their death, the coal placer is exempt, is indicated in the following source, Disnan. Kovash olov lesocha ur lesocha mayim v'eino yochol lalois misham. Let's say someone fell into a fire and was trying to get out, or someone fell into water and was trying to get out, and someone was kovash olov, literally pressed upon them, preventing the sufferer from salvation, preventing them from escape from the fire or the water, and umes, and then the victim died. Chayav, the offender, the fellow who prevented them from escape, is considered guilty of a capital offense. Someone shoved another individual into a fire or into the water. And the victim could have escaped, but didn't. Umes, and died. Potter, the one who shoved them in, is exempt. Why? Because the victim had his own ability to escape. Likewise, with regard to the coal placed on the chest, the victim in that case could have saved himself, could have shoved the coal off his chest. Therefore, the offender in those cases is exempt. Bigdoi desnan. Rabbo had taught a second point, a coal hot coal placed on someone's garments. And Rabbah taught that the placer of the coal is held responsible. And we see that in the following. A person says, Kra es ksusi, or Shaber es kadi. This is, it says, rip my clothing. Or he says, break my pitcher. Chayov, the one who did thusly, who broke the pitcher, or who ripped his clothing, has to compensate, has to pay for the damages. Rashi adds, Chayov, Rashi that we've accompanied with a star, Dehochi komar le, im tirtze kra vishalem. The speaker was saying thusly, if you want, you can tear my clothing, but you'll have to pay. We continue in the Tanaic source, al menas liftar, potter. If, however, the fellow called out saying, tear my clothing with the condition that you will be exempt for paying for tearing the clothing or for breaking the vessel, potter, then there would be exemption. So that we saw before the placing of the coal, even though on the clothing, even though the owner of the clothing could have removed the coal, you see over here, the person was inviting someone to tear his clothing. He didn't have to invite him to tear the clothing. Nevertheless, the person who does tear the clothing is held responsible, assuming no exemption clause was expressed. Boy, Rabbah. Now, Rabbah, up till now we've seen numerous statements of his. Here, Rabbah raises a question. Hiniach kecheles alev avdoi mahu. We have an aleph over here, and if you see an aleph, obviously there will be a beis. Beis, you can see at the end of the next line, introduces a second level of question. So we start with the first level of question. Rabbah's question is, a coal is placed on someone's slave. A man owns a slave, places the coal on the heart of his slave. Kegufo domi oi kimamono domi. Do we view the placing of the coal on his slave's heart as placing it on someone's body? And just like we saw before, placing it on someone's body results in the exemption of the offender, because the person upon whom the coal was placed could have simply shoved off, could have pushed off the coal. So if you view the Eved as gufo, there would be exemption. O kimono domi. Or do we view the slave as a piece of property, as an item owned by the individual? And in that context, placing a coal on someone's mamon, so that would be grounds for holding the one placing the coal responsible. Im timsaloma kegufo domi, if you say that the slave is viewed simply as a fellow human being and not as an owned article, but it's rather kegufo. We now, that leads us into a second question. Shoro mahu. Let us say someone placed a coal on someone else's ox. Hodar poshto. After raising the question, Rabbah then resolved the two questions. Avdo kegufo. Placing a coal on someone's slave would not result in the offender being responsible. The slave should have shoved it off. Shoro kimamono. However, placing a coal on someone's ox, the ox doesn't have that level of, let's say, intelligence to push off the coal, and hence you would be held responsible for the resultant damage and death of that particular ox. Before we conclude, I'm sure everyone is taking note of the fact that with the help of the one above, we've successfully concluded the second perek of Bava Kama. Before we, however, conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.